I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, a number of rather dramatic issues involving the state of Israel. There's the specter of Hamas rockets falling once again on Israel. You saw yesterday one squarely hit a home near Mishmeret, near Tel Aviv, wounding all six residents, two parents, their two children, and the two grandparents living with them. Hamas rockets have continued to rain on Israel, at least 60 overnight. One fell on the floor of a child's bedroom in Sderot. Fortunately, it did not explode. Israel has responded with many airstrikes, including one on the office of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, his own office. Then there is ongoing reaction to President Donald Trump's recognizing the Golan Heights as part of Israel. And in Washington, D.C., some 18,000 participants closed out the 2019 AIPAC National Policy Conference, which had some controversy of its own over whether Democrats running for their party's presidential nomination would or would not show up after MoveOn.org suggested Democratic members of Congress boycott the annual pro-Israel convention. Well, for some analysis and insight on all that's going on in the Jewish world today, I am so happy to be able to speak once again to a man with passion and insight when it comes to all things Jewish, the president of the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem, Daniil Hartman. Daniil, thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.
Daniil, you're in Washington right now, correct?
Correct.
And you attended AIPAC. I'd love to have your reaction. What was your overall impression of things you either heard, saw, people you spoke to at the three-day conference?
Well, there's the things that everybody talks about, and you know me, I don't like to talk about what everybody talks about.
Yes.
That's why you speak to me, hopefully. I think the central question that we're facing today, and I felt that this was underneath much of what was going on at the conference, is how do we ensure that Israel remain a bipartisan issue?
Yes.
But bipartisanship in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is not how we make sure that Republican and Democratic senators and congressmen support Israel. The real question is, how does it remain a bipartisan issue in the Jewish community? Used to be that we knew we could rally around certain things. You could be Republican, you could be Democrat, most were Democrat. But we understood that we had to make sure that people on both sides of the aisle in power and government supported Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is still a major issue, but we're only going to be successful if people on both sides of the Jewish aisle, if the different divides within our community are able to find a way to reconnect and to be supportive of Israel. Now, it's easy for us to be supportive around slogans. All Jews were against anti-Semitism.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what else is new? It's okay for Jews to be against anti-Semitism. It's not exactly
very easy
to wake
right
up in the morning. It's easy. You know, we could all be excited about Jerusalem shall be the uninvited capital of the Jewish people for now and all eternity. What exactly that means doesn't matter. It's a slogan. Everybody, you can get a cheer. You can get a standing ovation.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's real issues, though, today, Mark. We're facing real, real issues in the Jewish community in which Jews who want to be supportive of Israel sometimes feel that there's a conflict between their Jewish values and what Israel stands for. It used to be that if someone wasn't committed to Judaism, they'd have a problem with Israel. Now, there's questions about those who are committed to Judaism, what about, does Israel represent those values? Is Israel committed to Jewish peoplehood? How do we balance our security needs? How do we balance our need to support Israel to make sure that it's strong? And at the same time, to make sure that Israel is the type of country we want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So this issue is, I believe, the most critical issue. And you sense in a lot of the sessions and in a lot of the conversation a sensitivity to that. I don't think we yet know how to do it. Honestly, we know how to make sure that someone declares that the Golan Heights is ours and that Jerusalem is ours and that Pittsburgh was bad. Great. After we reach that meaningless consensus in many ways, because even the Golan Heights is a meaningless consensus, nobody in the Jewish community, not a single party in Israel, is considering returning it to who? To a non-existent country? So it was that those are the easy, they're not even mountains to climb. They're molehill. They're nothing. They're anthills.
Yes.
The issue is how do we deal with some of the real divides about religious pluralism, democracy, peoplehood, relationships between Israel and anti-Semitic regimes, nationalism? There's big questions out there, and I feel that people want to deal with them, because at the end of the day, we'll have no problem getting around Israel and supporting it together, if there is room for all of us to talk and to engage with these issues.
Okay. You know, I love talking to you, and I love having you on JBS, because you're never facile, and you're not simplistic, and you're not prone to just give, as you say, slogans, and you're always trying to understand what's behind Jewish life today. I want to know, in terms of some of the things you said, you know, we're committed to Jewish values, and at the same time, we want to make sure Israel stands for the things that mean most to us. I will tell you, Daniil, although there's obviously always areas that you can criticize, in a larger sense, it has always seemed to me that Israel does represent the best of Jewish values. I want to know what you heard. You spoke to a lot of people, and they'll speak to you, Daniil, as they won't speak to others. You heard them. You heard sessions that dealt with the topics you talked about, and then you had private conversations. To the extent to which you don't have to use any names, to the extent to which you're comfortable, what was the expression to you of some of the ambivalence and some of the concern that you feel is gripping Jewish life today?
Great. Now, to be really clear, those who want to talk about the centrality of the Golan Heights for the future of Israel's security aren't going to come and talk with me. So if you want to hear that, and you want to hear and get excited about the latest technology about how Israel is turning air into water, I celebrate that.
Yes.
I celebrate Startup Nation. But those aren't, that's not, that, you're not going to say, oh, Daniil, I really want to talk to you about this latest. The people who do are the ones, there's two very serious challenges.
Please.
And both of them don't really accept your statement. More and more people don't believe that Israel represents the best of Jewish values. And we have to, you can't call them names. They're feeling that there's something going seriously wrong. And it's not, by the way, the occupation. Let's make this really clear. There are some people who are troubled by the occupation. But it's relatively easy to engage with people and to have people recognize that the lack of progress on the West Bank is not Israel's fault alone. And everybody recognizes that Gaza is a more complicated issue. So there are some people on the more extreme for whom these are central issues, but for the majority it's not. But when the Prime Minister of Israel single-handedly ensures that a Kahanist fascist party will be in the next Knesset solely for the sake of remaining in power, people say, one second, is this the best of Jewish values?
Okay, let me stop you there. And this is a superb example, but I want you to dig down for me. Any individual prime minister may do something that we don't think is, but we may hate it. The question is not what a prime minister does. The question is what the Israeli people, how do the people respond? Israel is not some concept. Israel is you, Daniil. It's the men and women of Israel. Let me finish. Is it your sense that the Israeli people endorse this right-wing, crazy, somewhat violent party? Because my own sense is, the response, not in about American Jews who sit here and say they want Israel to be live by Jewish values. The sense I have as Israelis is enormous criticism, even condemnation of what their prime minister does. As long as that's true, it seems to me that an American Jew who uses that as an example about Israel is not living by Jewish values really doesn't understand how any society works. You can be against a specific policy of anybody, certainly a prime minister, and it doesn't represent the country unless the country as a whole embraces and endorses it. So I'm asking you, from your perspective, does the Israeli people endorse this kind of political nonsense that Netanyahu has gotten himself into?
Great point, and I accept the distinction. But my answer would be that there is no Israeli people, but I would even say a majority of Israelis would be willing to have a coalition in which Otzma Yehudit is part of the coalition.
Why?
That's a very good question, why, but they are. How many people in Netanyahu's party condemned his move? Forget Netanyahu. How many people, every one of the top 10, 20, 30, they already had their seats guaranteed. Where were they? Tell me one figure. Tell me one figure. Now, it's interesting. One person who at the beginning supported it, Bennett, initially supported it, and then he reversed his position. He said they're unacceptable. Who within the future coalition, now this is not all of Israel, but this is a majority. You're talking about the Haredi parties. You're talking about Lieberman. You're talking all of them. Who would say, you know what?
It's not.
Our coalition is built on this.
It's not the majority. It is not the majority. That's not fair of you to say. It may be the group that puts together a coalition.
That's the mess. We don't have an electoral system in America like America.
Yes.
If the coalition, if 62, 64 seats represent, it's the majority of the Jewish population of Israel. Now, I'm not saying it's a huge majority. All I'm saying is that this is a current. It's not the act of a fringe. And when you're from 6,000 to 10,000 miles away, I agree with you, it's very important to distinguish between what your prime minister says and what he might do on a campaign and what the country stands for.
Yes.
But we have, that's an important distinction. But forget the prime minister. There is a chance that this government was profoundly problematic. The next government, on these core issues, I'm not talking about issues of Judea and Samaria, foreign policy. There are questions about your commitment to democracy, your commitment to religious pluralism, your commitment to Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people. Who stood up in Israel and defended North American Jewish interests when it comes to issues of religious pluralism? Who? So what happens is that it used to be, and here, it used to be that the great check and balance in Israeli political life was the fact that governments changed. So you'd have one government, and 2 years later you'd have another, and then it was very easy to separate, and important to separate, between Israel and a government. One government or another, a coalition made sure that you had diversity within the coalition. The real checks and balance in Israel are not between the one branch of government and the other. It was the coalition government itself, where different opinions had to sit with each other, and there were constant elections. So it represented, over a 10-year period of time, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years of those 10, you would find yourself in a story. You didn't have to be 10 out of 10, but you'd be there for a while. This has been going on since 1977, when Menachem Begin came into power. There is no single hegemony, but for now, for the last 10 years, there's been a very stable coalition with a very clear political agenda. And North American Jews, you're asking me, what is it that people are saying? They're looking and saying it's not one individual. The policies of the state of Israel for many years now and for the foreseeable future are ones that I Jewishly feel uncomfortable with. Now that's this. Yeah, you ask me, what are people talking? This is there. When rabbis come to me and they say, what do I do when my commitment
okay,
to my
by people, the way, I
have, it's different than my commitment when my commitment to Israel, which is there, is violating some of my Jewish principles. What do I do?
Okay, so I did ask you, what are you hearing? And it's no one is going to hear it like you do. That's why I'm thrilled anytime you can give me some time. What I am suggesting, however, is that the notion that Israel does not represent Jewish values is a notion that is on the far left in the Jewish world. And that I want to know, with Daniel Hartman, what was your answer when people said to you, gee, Israel isn't living up to Jewish values on the in the broadest sense of the word. When you talk
this
about
is
Jewish
not
values,
the far left,
when you talk
this
about
is
Jewish,
not the far left.
Wait a minute. When you talk about Jewish values, the extent to which life in Israel, in terms of the way it treats minorities, Arabs, Syrian wounded in Syria, the extent to which Israel is on the forefront of going to places all over the world, Israel aid whenever it's needed, the extent to which we can have this discussion. And by the way, when you say, who was it that was standing up for Jewish pluralism in Israel? It's always been a problem. As long as I've been a practicing rabbi, aware of what life is in Israel, there has always been a disconnect between Jewish pluralism, which Israelis do not understand at all, and how America would like Israel to behave. Until the Israeli people care about who stands at the Western Wall, this is going to be a fringe issue in the state of Israel. But that doesn't make Israel less responsive to or honest to Jewish values?
See, if you want me, and I don't think you do, to give a list of those areas where I believe Israel is not living up to its values, I'm not interested in giving you the laundry list. But I think what part of what we have to understand is when you start at the outset by saying this is a criticism of the far left, you're not in touch with the American Jewish community. I'm out there. I speak to hundreds and hundreds and thousands of, not hundreds of thousands, hundreds and thousands of people, rabbis. I have a pulse. It's not the far left anymore. It's
what
not
is,
a small
group. How would you define it?
Mainstream liberal democratic Jews who love Israel and who aren't walking away from it are looking and saying, I have a problem. When Israel is ranked, how is Israel treating refugees? How does Israel speak about its Arab minority? What is the significance of the nation state law? Now, I'm not getting into a debate. I speak to people about these issues. Very often, the criticism is unfounded, but very often it's founded. It's grounded. There are multiple issues. To what extent are we going to have checks and balances within our system? Is the Supreme Court still is going to be able to override laws that are problematic, or is a simple majority going to be sufficient in the state of Israel? There are real issues, real, real issues that a liberal Jew, and from that you can be from modern Orthodox, conservative reform, reconstructionist, renewal, post-denominational, secular. I'm not talking about some fringe little JVP or little group that nobody knows about.
I understand.
It's about real. It's there. And as long as the Jewish community thinks it's fringe, and as long as we say, you don't get it right, and I want to tell you this is not the state of Israel, and we quote all the good stories, for every one of the stories you just mentioned, I could quote another one. And you don't want me to because you don't even want to hear them.
By the way, it's not
but
that
they're
I,
there.
It's
there's
not that
issues.
I.
You want to speak about the Israeli rights of Israeli Arabs? Well, let me. Do you know what the number one issue of Israeli Arabs is? Do you know what the number one concern of an Israeli Arab today? It's not Palestinian statehood. That's number five or six. Their number one issue is violent crime and guns in their community and shootings. And I want to tell you, the police would not allow that to exist in any Jewish community. There's issues. We have a way to go. Now, I think we're miraculous in the context of the Middle East. I think I don't know of any democracy that could function under the conditions that Israel's functioning under. So great. So after we finished feeling good about ourselves, and by the way, I do feel good about myself. I love Israel. But that's not the issue right now, and that's not the issue that you asked me. You know, you didn't ask me what are the reasons why we could still feel good about ourselves. I could give you many. I'm a Zionist. I love Israel. I find it's an honor to live there and to raise my children there. But because I love Israel, it doesn't mean that I can't recognize that we have ways to go. But more than that, you asked me what are some of the issues that are concerning people. And people, not the fringe, are looking. 6 to 10,000 miles away, it looks a little more. Sometimes you don't see everything that you should see. But at the same time, for a very long time, they're sensing a public tone in Israeli society, which is very alien to some of the things that they care about.
Okay, hold on. I want to take a step back because I think you make a very important point, and I want to respond and say you are right. And when I used the word far left, it was misleading and it was inaccurate. And I agree with you that it's not simply the left, but there's a large swath of what you use the term liberal. I understand what you mean. The liberal Jewish community, a large swath of the liberal American Jewish community, is not comfortable with Israel. You are correct. And I wish I had said it that way. So good for you. At the same time, when we listen to you, Daniil, to what extent is the concern with Israel, in your mind, overriding the good of Israel? Because the people you are referring to are people who are seeing Israel that way.
What happens is that in our universe, and this connects to the larger essence of contemporary Jewish life, we all are Jew, or the majority of Jews are Jews by choice. We have to choose our Judaism. We have to choose to belong. And just like we have to choose to belong to a synagogue, we also have to choose to belong and to be connected to Israel. Now, you and I, we're not Jews by choice. I'm not choosing my identity, nor am I choosing my relationship with Israel. I'm connected to Israel literally through blood. I'm connected regardless of what Israel does. But that's not what contemporary Jewish life is about. And the same Jews who don't affiliate with a synagogue or who have a membership but don't show up, it doesn't have to be that Israel is horrific. It doesn't have to be all black. The question is there any light, or how much light, or is there enough there to make it worth my while?
Is there any question for the answer?
There absolutely is a question.
For you?
Not for me. For me, I don't even ask the question. I want you to understand. I don't ask that question.
Okay. When you hear the question asked. When you hear the question asked, and you just said to me, for you it's not even a question. When you hear the question asked, what's your response?
My response is, there's multiple stages to this response. Some of it is at the core, and some of it is educational and pedagogical. The first thing you have is you have to make the person who feels that they're asking a question, that they feel they're being heard, that they're not being discounted, because you're not going to convince them through facts. I've spoken to you this about in the past. People
yes.
do not pick their opinions. You're not going to. It's not going to be a fact.
Yes.
You're going to get into a factual debate. Like you mentioned Syria. So someone will say Israel has the lowest foreign aid of any OECD country. So for every fact, we'll give you a counterfact. You'll speak about what Israel does in Haiti, and the counterfact will be that Israel has the most negative attitude towards refugees of any developed country in the world. So you do fact, that's ping pong, it doesn't get anywhere. The first thing you do is you say, I hear you. The second thing you do is I share your concerns. And the truth is I do. I do share the concerns, because I'm not satisfied for Israel to have a passing grade. Israel has to be outstanding. And the third thing I say is we need you to not walk away. I need you to fight for the Israel that you want. Love of Israel is not waving a flag. Love of Israel is not saying amen. Love of Israel is getting down in the trenches, and prior generations had to fight for our survival. Prior generations had to dry swamps. Well, we have to make sure that in the most difficult region in the world, we could sustain a Jewish democracy. Welcome to the challenge of 21st century Jewish life. Are you in, or are you going to be a spectator outside, being an outside critic? So, but I engage them and say, now come in. Now, in many cases, you're right. Where you're wrong, I also talk to you. So, for example, very often people criticize various legislation in Israeli government, not knowing that the legislation that they're criticizing is not the legislation that was passed. Very often there's a legislation which is put forth on the Knesset for its first reading. It often has a more extreme version to it. That's the version that gets all of the press. Then it goes back to a committee and it gets adjusted. And the law that's passed has nothing to do with the law that was criticized, but people are still criticizing the early law. So where I can engage, where I could talk, let's talk. But at the same time, when there are difficulties, the issue we have is not telling people you're wrong, but telling people, okay, now help build the Israel that we need.
Okay.
Help to build the Israel that you and your grandchildren could want
okay.
to have a part,
okay.
would want to have a place in.
No one does that better than you. And my only I'm only sad that we're not in studio together. We don't have an hour together. I only have another minute or so with you. So I want to turn and ask you two specific questions. Number one is, were you happy or were you upset that President Trump said, in essence, the Golan Heights here on out belongs to Israel? Did the annexation issue bother you or please you?
Neither.
Okay. The other question is, you were eloquent.
But I have to explain why. It was neither, because for me, the Golan Heights is a non-negotiable issue. It's already, nobody's even thinking about it. I'm sometimes a little concerned that when someone makes this declaration, now it's an issue again.
Okay.
I'm thinking about it.
It's ironic.
What's
but
the thing? Of course. What do you think? I'm giving the Heights back to the murderer Assad. It's crazy. Who even...
I'm almost out of time. I'm going to make sure I get this question in. The last time you were on, you were eloquent trying to explain to American Jewry the impossible position Israeli soldiers were in when they were up at the Gaza fence, and why you were not critical of what was going on there. My question now is, do you worry, do you fear there will be now another war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza?
I feel that war is almost inevitable. I don't know if it's going to happen now, but it's inevitable because Israel is in a position that is unacceptable. We cannot have a group of terrorists deciding one morning or one afternoon, oops, you know, let's fire a missile. Today, now let's do it tomorrow. Now, these missiles can't destroy the state of Israel, but they could create fear, and they could injure and kill real people. Well, no country in the world could allow itself to be at the beck and call of murderers. And somewhere along the line, Israel's going to have to do something. The problem that we face in Gaza is that it's not clear whether there's a military solution at all, but that a country will not try a military... Status quo is not acceptable. And just the last 24 hours are a perfect example.
Yes.
You can't live this way. You can't. And I just hope that when the decision is made, that it's done thoughtfully and intelligently. There's a whole that serious people make that decision. The challenge we face is that even if we capture Gaza, nobody wants to stay in Gaza.
Yes.
So once you leave Gaza, you go back to square one again.
Yes.
Is there something that we could do? In Gaza, the issue is, just like in Lebanon, in the second Lebanon war, is there something that we could do that can give us 5 years? That's the equation.
Okay.
And hopefully we will do so judiciously, because the situation is just simply unacceptable.
Okay. In 30 seconds, Daniil, is Netanyahu going to win this election despite all the legal problems he's facing?
He won't win the election. The question is whether he'll be the only one who could form the coalition.
Yes.
That's a completely separate issue.
You're right.
And
it's the latter.
And it comes down to two or three seats. Nobody knows. If he has a 61 majority, he won't be able to rule. He needs 64 to 65. Current polls have him ranging between 60 to 64. No way to know. It's too close to call.
Fair enough. I love talking to you. There's no one like you. I appreciate you always giving time to me. And I'm going to say this again. I want you in studio. We now moved our offices to New York City, Daniil, so it's easier for you to get here. I look forward to seeing you as soon as
It would be my pleasure. I love talking with you.
Thank you so much, my dear friend.
It's a pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Be well. The thoughts of Daniil Hartman, president of the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem. As always, my thanks to our director, Sloan Copeland, JBS's associate director, Dara Golub, editor, John McDevitt, and to the producer of In the News, Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Be well, my friends.